Steve, let me ask you a personal question.
Okay.
Do you have a mother, Steve?
I do indeed.
Fantastic.
Don't we all?
Yeah, well, yes, we all do, but I'm sure you're a good son and you love your mother, don't you, Steve?
The best. I'm like legendary.
Very good. Very good. Well, I got a tip for you. You can really win Mother's Day. Win your mother over on Mother's Day. Cement your reputation as this really good son. Give your mom an Aura digital picture frame. Have you heard of these things, Steve?
Yes, I have.
They're loaded up with decades of photos. You can just like hook them up to the phone and then you get the photos running through it, kind of scrolling through it. You seen these things?
Yeah, they're great.
They're really cool. Yeah, and you can get everything. And pictures of your mom, pictures of whoever, your family, your brothers, all these things. They're a wonderful item. And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code word ChinwagPod at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. This is Paul Giamatti speaking.
And this is Stephen Asma. And this episode of Chinwag is sponsored by BetterHelp.
It is indeed, Steve. Let me ask you a blunt question. Do you ever feel stuck, Steve? I'm serious. Do you ever feel kind of stuck in the mud?
Every day, my friend.
Yeah.
Every damn day.
And then what happens is you get overwhelmed because you're kind of stuck, right?
True.
As I get older, and I am getting older, folks, I may not look it. You may think, oh, he's like Dorian Gray.
He's going backwards.
Yeah, wow. He's going backwards. I am getting older, folks. It's hard to believe. The thing I notice is how important it is to maintain a balance. You know, I guess you'd call it work-life balance. I don't think I'm alone here, but therapy's helped me do this balance. It can help you find equilibrium. It can help you feel more empowered in the decisions you make, the boundaries and priorities you set. It's good in that way. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Sometimes that's hard, right? To find the right person. So this helps. You can change. So learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/chinwag today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/chinwag. Chinwag is on the air, Steve. I'm Paul Giamatti.
I am Stephen Asma.
Indeed, you are. And, you know, we love getting the letters from you.
Yeah, we do.
We really do. Please keep them coming in. We want to share some of the great comments and fan mail we received. And to that end, here it is. This is a letter from a gentleman named Paul in Australia. And Paul says, "Dear Paul and g'day from Australia.
Mate.
I am a longtime admirer of yours, thank you, and I'm excited by the eclectic direction of your new Chinwag podcast." That's a nice word.
It's cool.
Nice word to be applied
we'll
to this.
It.
Eclectic. Yes, I will. "You and Stephen may be interested in an area known as paleo contact, the theory that our ancient ancestors experienced contact with other non-terrestrial civilizations. My books argue that paleo contact is embedded in many of the world's ancestral narratives, including the Bible. I have come to view this with a background of 33 years in church-based ministry as a church doctor, theological educator, training pastors, and as an archdeacon. That's one step down from a bishop in the Anglican Church of England, Episcopalian Church in Australia."
Impressive.
Very impressive. "My expertise is in hermeneutics, the principles of interpreting ancient texts. Wishing you health and peace, Paul." So this is interesting. First of all, Paul, I have always been unsure what hermeneutics meant, and had a vague idea that it was like,
yeah, interpretation, basically
the study of interpretation and like an interpretation. Does it? I didn't know that it always applied to ancient texts. Does it? Or
I think it does. I would say 90% of it applies to ancient texts, but in the late 19th and early 20th century, they started to use it to talk about other complex texts as well, like secular texts, philosophical texts.
Yeah, because I think of it, when I was in college, I can remember there being all these kind of very fancy students in the literature department talking about hermeneutics, and I had no fucking idea what they were talking about.
Yeah.
And I was always like, I think it got very popular then too in the 80s and the 90s, 70s and 80s.
Totally.
All this kind of fancy literary theory about like and interpreting texts and stuff like that. But that's really cool.
I think because of the postmodern folks like Jacques Derrida, they were sort of like the text is like almost like a cave and you can go into the text and start to find like alternative meanings of
right.
everything.
Right, you can kind of, it's pretty, that's right. Like a thing is pretty flexible. But it sounds to me like Paul here is actually applying a more rigorous...
Right, to the ancient stuff.
Well, maybe. I mean, I don't know. I mean, he's talking about some pretty wild stuff.
Yeah.
Paleo contact, this is a, like ancient astronaut sort of thing.
Right.
That there's kind of these visitations and...
Paleo contact. I like that word.
Paleo contact. I do too. And it goes back this idea.
Yeah, what is he thinking? Like Ezekiel? Remember there's like maybe a UFO might be described like a spinning wheel in Ezekiel?
There is. There's the wheel of fire in Ezekiel that he sees. And then he has another vision of an entity coming out of the wheel of fire. I think there's a crazy fucking angel that comes out of the wheel of fire.
Yeah, there's people in it or something, or maybe I'm confusing that with the...
Yeah, there's an angel. And I think a lot of those, some of those prophetic books have stuff like that. Daniel, I think, has a crazy vision of stuff.
Right.
And Revelations has a lot of stuff like that. And there's like a lot of crazy stuff like that. Particularly the Bible. Yeah, I guess so. All the alien astronaut stuff kind of starts in the 60s and 70s, I think, with that Eric von Daniken, who's the guy who did Chariots of the Gods, which was this thing that was a really big deal.
Went to see that in the 70s as a kid.
So did I. I went and saw them. Absolutely. I had the book and he wrote a bunch of books and that stuff was really, really cool. But there were guys, it's a little different, but there's other guys. There's this guy, Velikovsky and... Emmanuel Velikov, but he wrote about sort of, his whole thing was the sort of myths and stuff, that the flood myth is more prevalent. He wrote about kind of the possibility of like Jericho, the sun actually stopped. There were actual natural events.
That were really anomalies, weird.
The falling of the walls of Jericho is like an earthquake and stuff. He had a whole thing like that. But there was a guy named Zechariah Sitchin, I think his name was, who started a lot of this stuff too before.
Because von Daniken's became kind of a crank, or at least he's not taken as seriously, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, but this guy, I think, was more in the, it's a lot of stuff with the Mayans and the Aztecs. And there's a lot of the art has a lot of this stuff where it looks like...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Talk about that for a second. There's like some...
Well, there's like some of the hieroglyphs, the Mayan and Aztec hieroglyphs. Some of them look like a guy in the cockpit
I've seen that one.
A rocket or something. And some of them look like there's these huge, massive stone heads that look like they're wearing a helmet with a microphone and stuff. And there's the Nazca lines in Peru, which are these huge drawings in the floor of the desert.
That stuff is amazing.
That can really only be seen from above as what they are.
Yeah, why would you make such a thing? You can't tell
it's a bird, which is why that's what people say, because it's like a landing pad for the gods and stuff like that. It's a landing pad. And there's all these things like the Dogon in Western Africa is this group of people that claim to have, well, they didn't claim it. They did have pretty advanced astronomical knowledge about the double star system of Sirius, the double star of Sirius, they seem to know about this before anybody else did.
Is that right?
And they claim that these people landed in a boat from space, from the sky, and stuff like that. But as you were just saying to me a little bit earlier, before we were even recording, like all traditions seem to have stories of people coming out of the sky.
Yeah.
To give them wisdom or to give them something or to like...
Or across the sea. There's that, or out of the sea. That's another one too.
Or coming out of the sea. Right. That's true. So it's like, it's a,
can you imagine if you were like a Native American on the, you know, at Plymouth or something, and then you see these people coming, you know, from Europe?
No,
you'd
totally.
Just be like, what the fuck? And they thought Captain Cook was a god, you know, I think this was in the Hawaiian Islands.
I mean, it's an encounter. It's like an alien encounter. It really is. This is interesting you say that. I was in DC recently and I went to that amazing African American History Museum that they have there, which is few several years old. It's amazing. And they had an exhibit on Afrofuturism
there,
which is sort of this kind of, you know, interesting subject. And it's all about kind of science fiction and as it relates to the Black American experience and stuff like that. And it's really cool. But it had never occurred to me that and I'd even read some in Octavia Butler too, some stuff like this, that the narrative and the reality of being abducted and sold into slavery has a very weird analog with sort of alien abduction.
That's interesting.
That it's this idea of being stolen, put on this fucking ship, shipped off, and, you know, this fucking shit happens to you. And it's like, but the idea of the abduction thing is really, I'd never made any kind of connection between those two things. Duh. It's like, what an interesting, weird connection.
So writers and musicians in the Afrofuturist movement are sort of identifying that.
I think some have, which I thought was, wow, that's a really amazing concept.
Well, there's sort of two narratives, right? Which one is that the abduction or the other creature means you harm, and this case we're just talking about would be a clear case of that. But then the other narrative is that the creature is bringing some kind of wisdom that you can't get on your own. And we've talked about this before. There is a great, I think it's a Persian story, where these fishmen come out of the ocean and then they bring special knowledge and wisdom to human beings. Mm-hmm. Like, and in fact, they think they bring speech.
Oh, really?
So my understanding is that Carl Sagan, Sagan looked at this stuff like in the 70s, and he was like, look, if there is such a thing as contact from the old times, it would show up in these old ancient spiritual texts. And so we need to look at these kinds of passages. And I got a feeling our man Paul here from Australia is doing that kind of thing.
Probably.
But then Sagan sort of backed off it because he didn't want to, he's like, I don't want to sound weird, you know.
Yeah. Getting too wacky, yeah, for him. That's interesting. Well, the fish, well, all of that, yeah, writing and speech and stuff. I think there's lots of interesting traditions like that of sort of like, yeah, speech and writing especially.
Because it's such a jump in evolution. It's like, whoa, how come, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's like I just saw 2001 last night. Right. I was telling you, I went and saw 2001 last night. And it's very much like along those lines. Like something pushes you
the
along.
The monolith.
And it is hard to know. It is fascinating. It's super fascinating. This brings up a whole other thing for me that would be interesting to discuss. I'm just going to mention it's the whole sort of like Neanderthal alien culture kind of thing. Or the sort of Neanderthals were sort of psychic and Neanderthals were sort of in contact. There's
really?
A whole kind of like, there's a whole sort of realm of thought that they were these kind of super beings, advanced beings. And then they're kind of wiped out by the sort of, you know, I mean, I think it's a kind of school of thought that goes way back, but then it's like, you know, that they were these kind of insightful, kind of artistic geniuses that were also...
Did we kill them off? Is that the thesis?
And that we sort of killed them off. Yeah, that we kind of killed them off. And they're sort of in contact with higher beings. Wow. And they're sort of like, you know, there's a lot of this kind of...
Here's my general, like, point of skepticism on all this, which is I'm totally open to... I actually really like the idea that maybe there could have been another civilization here like millions of years ago. I think it's a kind of a cool idea, but I have to see some physical evidence. Like it's not enough for the hermeneutic approach. Like that's one component.
To say, oh, there's all these cave paintings that show somebody coming out of the sky that's like, or rock paintings.
And I think with Neanderthals, I mean, of course, I'm open to all kinds of stuff, but I think they are their own kind of miracle. They don't need to be aliens. Neanderthals are fucking amazing just on their own.
Yeah, they are amazing. Yeah. And it seems like they discover more and more about them being kind of advanced in terms of like the kind of funereal stuff.
Yeah, they used to bury
their dead. They treated their dead and stuff like that. It's really cool. That stuff is really cool.
There's evidence that they would bring flowers from a totally different region and then bury the corpse with the flowers, suggesting a kind of funeral, you know, event.
The fact that they had the flowers in the graves is amazing. That's really, really cool. Fascinating. Well, there's a lot in that. That's a whole topic in and of itself. And then relating to the Bible is a whole subset of that stuff. I mean, it's a huge amount of that stuff going on. It's super interesting.
I suppose the argument against my request for physical evidence would be that, you know, the earth just takes back you know, the jungles reabsorb and the planet reabsorbs cities and whole empires. So if the civilization is so ancient, then you're not going to find physical evidence for it. But that's
or convenient. It's not going to be something we recognize, or it's arguable too that, you know, something like it's arguable, I'm sure, that like the pyramid, Stonehenge, that place in Turkey, that crazy what is it, Topeki Göbekli or whatever it's called, that thing in Turkey, I can't remember. Yeah, that these things were probably that the aliens assisted in making them. So in some sense, they're an alien artifact because the aliens were like, let me lift up those rocks with this cosmic ray.
I think humans are cooler than we think, and they were able to pull this shit off themselves. That's my sense of it.
Yeah, well, that's good.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Somebody asked us about what our favorite science fiction books. We should do that.
You're a huge sci-fi fan.
Are you? That's something I meant to ask you. Are you a science fiction fan?
I like it, but it's not, I think you're up here, you're a huge fan, and I'm like a sort of a, you know, moderate fan of sci-fi.
Did you read like fantasy books? Did you read like Tolkien and stuff like that?
I read Tolkien and I read the great Piers Anthony. But did you? I was not a big fantasy fan either.
You're the second person I've ever known. You're the second person and the first person I've ever known who read those. Oh, she's going to be delighted is my girlfriend, Clara.
Has good taste with Piers Anthony.
Big fan of Piers Anthony. That's hilarious. I never read one. I read some of the later ones that he wrote about, like the one about death, the guy who has to. There's one he wrote called On a Pale Horse about a guy.
Oh, I've heard of it, but I haven't read it.
Death dies, I think.
Oh, really?
Death gets destroyed and he has to take over and be death.
That's awesome.
He has to take over death's job. And he has to go around. Yeah, it's great.
That's a really great premise.
Yeah, it was really good. But I do. Yeah, I mean, I have read a lot. It surprises me how much I've read.
It's very philosophical. I feel like science fiction is.
It's fantastic. Yeah, no, it's awesome. And it's best. It's like it's really amazing. But my favorite ones. Have you ever read? I mean, the ones I can think of off the top of my hands are famous ones. I don't know if I can think of any. Not terribly. I mean, I've read a lot of obscure stuff, but I don't know that I think it's as good as some of the famous stuff. Like I really love Lathe of Heaven, which is by Ursula K. Le Guin.
Which is
a really great
recommend
book about a guy who can change reality with his dreams.
Love that.
It's like a basic science fiction book. It just does so much good stuff in it. It's great. It's just such
Ursula K. Le Guin is one of my favorite sci-fi writers too.
Yeah. Dispossessed is a good book. Like all of her stuff is really great. But that book
She has a quote that actually sort of reminds me of you. And other creative people. The quote, I'm probably going to botch it now, but she says, when you meet a really creative person, that is an indication that the child has survived to adulthood.
Oh, nice.
I think that's a kind of a cool point about creativity.
Yeah, that's great. What else do I like? I like all that Philip K. Dick stuff, which is great.
So do I.
I mean, I love all that stuff. I could never even pick one. They're all great. All that stuff. I was having seen 2001 last night. I mean, like one of the first guys that got me into it was Arthur C. Clarke. And like all of that stuff. There's a great one called The Fountains of Paradise that I remember really loving.
Oh, I haven't read that.
About a guy who tries to build an elevator to the moon. He's gonna macro engineer this elevator to the moon. And he builds it off a mountain in Sri Lanka. And there's all this great, because he's interesting. He gets in all this very kind of mystical stuff. Arthur C. Clarke. It's really cool.
He lived in Sri Lanka too.
He did. And there's a lot of stuff in his books that gets, 2001 becomes very mystical in a way. He walks a really interesting line.
Yes.
He does. And there's a lot of stuff in his later books, because it's Sri Lanka, I think, about Buddhism. And in that one, there's a lot of stuff about Buddhism.
Yes.
In that book, because it's set in Sri Lanka. And it's really, that's a great book, The Fountains of Paradise, which was one of my favorite Arthur C. Clarke.
Yeah, the idea that you could transcend your little individual human ego self to be either a bigger sort of creature or to join with some larger cosmic consciousness,
yeah,
is something that, like,
yeah,
I feel like it's in 2001, obviously, yeah, a little bit.
Childhood's End and all that stuff. It's interesting too how much there is in 2001 and then the book Childhood's End and stuff. This theme of like rebirth, of reaching this point where you're like, where you reach this new stage of consciousness and stuff, yeah, that feels very cool. Mystical. That doesn't necessarily feel, he's really cool.
Now, what do you think of the distinction between like hard sci-fi versus what they call soft sci-fi? Like, do you care? Do you follow that?
No. And I like both of those things.
You like
and
both?
It's like, because the hard stuff made me feel smart because I'm stupid and I'm not smart and I'm not smart with science. So it always made me be like, I can actually follow the science in this. And it's like, so now I'm smart. And it's like, but I also just liked that. I liked the hard stuff. I enjoyed some of that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was some really great stuff like that. There's a crazy book called Dragon's Egg.
Dragon's Egg.
That, unfortunately, I think the guy who wrote
it. Is it Heinlein? Well,
I think the guy, I can't remember the guy's name. Like Heinlein, the unfortunate thing is a lot of this stuff was written by loony, like libertarian loons. And Dragon's Egg, I think, is written by this loony libertarian guy who really just, but it's an interesting book. It's about, and it's all based in very hard science. And actually, it gets difficult to follow sometimes. And it's about life on a neutron star. Whoa. Life of alien life develops on a neutron star, which is so massive, gravitationally massive, that we can't survive on it. But this crazy, weird, like extended flat creatures develop their own culture. And it's like, and it's really cool. And it gives you the whole history of this crazy alien culture.
Wow.
That's just like, and it's, but it's all based in science.
Did you ever read Francis Abbott's Flatland?
I've never read Flatland, but it's interesting because it has a Flatland thing. Now, I've never read Flatland. Yeah, I've never read Flatland.
Well, this new guy, I just wanted to mention in terms of hard sci-fi, the Chinese writer, Zixin Liu, has this great trio of books that are super popular. I remember Obama was sort of recommending them. It's like the
Those are very
problem.
Science-based. Yeah, those are really science-based. Yeah, those are very good.
But then he's not good at character development. It's like,
no.
It's super good with the science, but the characters are like, I don't care about any of these people.
Yeah, and that's all a lot of people say with a lot of science fiction, is that it's rare when you get somebody that can sort of pull off both things.
Yeah.
That they're good writers and they're speculative, their stuff is interesting. I think Philip K. Dick's a good writer. A lot of people don't. And it's
I like him.
But I actually think he's kind of an interesting writer. But he's more like, that's more soft, I would say, than hard science fiction. And it's almost kind of just philosophical and almost fantastical. It's almost its own thing. It's not really.
Yeah.
And another guy that I like a lot that I just want to give a final plug for is a guy that I talk to you about a lot, is this guy Clifford Simic, who's a very old school. He's an old school guy from like the kind of golden age, all those sort of like Asimov and all of those guys. He's that era. He might even be a little older than those guys. And he writes this really kind of great laid back.
Yeah,
It's all set in the Midwest. It's all set in Wisconsin.
Yeah, my brother Dave will be very happy that you mentioned his favorite writer.
It's got this rural kind of like, it's got this rural thing to it. It's all kind of farmers who like come across aliens and stuff. And the greatest, he wrote a lot of great books, but there's one that I really love. It's called Way Station. It's about a guy who, he's a Civil War vet who is granted immortality in exchange for running a kind of way station, a way station for traveling extraterrestrials all over the universe who have to stop through this thing and move on to the next galaxy or whatever. And it is a really, really great book. And it's got this very kind of gentle, pastoral, like, they're full of this kind of like folksy wisdom and stuff. I really love them. I'm a real sucker for that guy. I think he's amazing.
He's just
amazing.
Awesome. So go out and get some Clifford Simic.
Clifford Simic. Yeah. Bring him back. He's fantastic. Anyway, all right. Well, that was a lovely wag. That was a really good one.
A good chin wag.
And they're honestly doing this with the letters is wonderful because it's like
it's really stimulating. Like
I have no idea where we're gonna go or anything.
Yeah. Thank you guys for sending in such cool
super
questions.
Cool. Thank you. And as always, visit us at various platforms and outlets to rate us, to give us reviews, write us these emails and letters because it's really great. Write us at questions@chinwagpod.fm because it's really great to get these things. It really is. It's
and
awesome.
And also check out our amazing animations if you can on YouTube.
On YouTube.
We've got some crazy, surreal animations by the great
Alex Sokol. Alex Sokol. Anyway, thanks for joining us. Join us again. Wag on!
Chinwag is a production of Treefort Media and Touchy Feely Films, hosted and executive produced by Paul Giamatti and Stephen Asma. Executive producers for Treefort are Kelly Garner and Lisa Ammerman. Dan Carey is executive producer for Touchy Feely. Our series producer is Rachel Whitley Bernstein. Original theme music by Luke Topp, with additional music by Via Mardot. Oscar Guido is our executive in charge of production. Tom Monahan is head of audio for Treefort. Audio production supervision by Matt Dyson. Editing and mixing by Jeff Neal. Animation created by Alex Sokol. Research assistance by Aiden Brooks. Lastly, for more information, go to chinwagpod.fm and find us on Instagram or TikTok at chinwagpod or on Twitter at chinwag_pod.
Oh, my stars, Steve. My stars and stripes, we have some exciting news. Shall we tell them?
We should reveal that Chinwag is hitting the road again and going on a West Coast tour.
Yes, that's right. If you missed us in your fair city, truly, friends, don't fret, don't fear, don't have a panic attack.
Do not panic. We will be recording live Chinwags in May in Los Angeles, Portland, and Seattle.
Yes, in L.A., we'll be at Dynasty Typewriter on May 14th. You can go to chinwagpod.fm/Los Angeles for tickets.
And on May 16th, we're going to be in Portland at Revolution Hall. For those tickets, go to chinwag.fm/Portland.
And we'll be at Town Hall, the great Town Hall in Seattle, on May 17th. For tickets to that, go to chinwagpod.fm/Seattle.
You do not want to miss this. It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be mighty, mighty.
So get your tickets at chinwagpod.fm, and we will see you there. Come on out, waggers.
Come out, waggers. Come out. Come out of hiding.